Today I want to focus on Jesus' very practical and challenging words in the gospel regarding fraternal correction. Jesus says, "If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone." Go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. This is very different than our cultural tendency. Our cultural tendency is that if someone sins against us, you write about it on Facebook, or we talk to a bunch of other people about it, which is called gossip. Often the last person that we would think to go to is the person who offended us in the first place. So why is this? Well, because it's much easier just to talk to everybody else about it, to advertise an injustice that's been done to us. Much harder to keep that to ourselves as much as possible and to go directly and privately to the one who has offended us. But this is what Jesus is asking of us. What Jesus asks of us in the gospel is not easy, but this is what he wants. He wants us to treat the person who's offended us or who sinned against us, to treat them with dignity. And we might be tempted to say, well, they didn't treat me with dignity when they said a bad thing about me, or when they lied to me, or cheated me, or hurt me. But Jesus doesn't give us permission to answer tit for tat. He doesn't tell us to treat another as they have treated you. What does he say instead? Treat each other as you wish to be treated. Jesus says, when you're kind to those who are kind to you, there's nothing special about that. True virtue is to be found when we are kind to those who are not kind to us. So this is the same teaching of Jesus as when he says that we must love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. Is this challenging? Absolutely. But this is what love is. Love is choosing the good for the other, even if they have not loved us. We have to love them. So what I think is really interesting about this section is that Jesus is talking first about disputes between individual people. When someone offends you or hurts you, this is how you must respond. And that's obviously difficult. That's very difficult for me. But then he gives some more steps, which is really interesting, which I think broadens this to include other situations in the Christian community. So Jesus says that if you go to someone privately and tell them their fault and they don't listen to you, then take one or two other people along with you. Again, he doesn't say if it doesn't work going to a person privately, then you can write about it on Facebook. He says, then take one or two other people along with you. And then he says, if he refuses to listen to this small group of people, then tell the church. And if he refuses to listen to the church, then treat him as you would a Gentile or a tax collector. Now, it's important for us to remember that when Jesus says to treat that person, then if everything else fails, to treat them as you would a Gentile or a tax collector, well, we have to treat Gentiles and tax collectors as Jesus treated Gentiles and tax collectors, which is with a great deal of love and outreach. So why does Jesus say that? Well, to treat them as you would a Gentile or tax collector. Well, it's because Gentiles and tax collectors are people who are not in the spiritual communion of the church. So he's saying, if someone is sinning grievously and doesn't amend their life, then they have placed themselves outside of the church's communion. And it's important to recognize that, even though we don't stop loving that person. So what this makes me think of is actually the way that excommunication works in the church. So a very famous example of this happened in the 60s during the civil rights era. And there was a Catholic politician in Louisiana who was supporting segregationist policies. And the U.S. bishops, as well as his own Archbishop of New Orleans, had said that as Catholics, we cannot support segregationist policies. But yet there was a Catholic politician who obstinately refused to do so. And famously, he was then excommunicated by the Archbishop of New Orleans. But there's a process to that, and actually the process is very similar to the one that Jesus gives us today. That first, that archbishop would have needed to go to that politician individually. And then maybe if that doesn't work, or if he doesn't respond, then he tries to get the help of a couple other people, maybe the person's pastor or another friend or an influential person. And if that didn't work, then the bishop would make some sort of a public statement denouncing the actions of this Catholic politician. And if that still didn't get them to repent, then that's when the excommunication would come into play. What's really important to remember is that every step along the way is meant to get the person to repent and return. So this is, I guess, more contemporarily, this would be the way a bishop has to handle the situation if it's a Catholic politician who supports abortion policy. Obviously, abortion is the killing of an innocent human life, and it hurts women, and Catholics cannot support abortion rights. And so if a bishop then would talk to privately a Catholic politician supportive of abortion rights, and if that doesn't work, or if he or she doesn't respond to that, he tries to get somebody else to help him in that. And then maybe he has to write something public, but then maybe he has to say that that politician is no longer able to receive communion in the church because of the scandalous action that they're doing. If this happens, it's out of love for this person. Because whenever we sin grievously, we put our souls in danger. I guess one question we could ask is, why bother with all of this? I mean, wouldn't it be much easier when someone sins against us, or if someone in the church publicly is sinning, wouldn't it be easier just to say, gosh, to heck with them? Let's just have nothing to do with them. Or another easier response, I guess, is to say, okay, well, this person is doing this, and let them live their own life. Why do we have to be involved? Why do we have to worry about it? Well, I think Jesus gives us a hint about this. In the very first line, one of the very first words he says in this passage, he says, if your brother sins against you, if your brother sins against you. Now, he's not saying, Father Matthew, if your brother Joel or your brother Nick or your sister Emily sins against you, he's not talking about our blood siblings here. In the early church, Christians called each other brother and sister. This is what they called each other. Why? Because as baptized people, they become the children of God along with Jesus, and thus brothers and sisters. And so if our brother or our sister is doing something wrong, we have to care for them. We have to love them in that. And that requires action from us. It might not be easy, it might make us uncomfortable, but love for that person demands it. So this is why the attitude, well, to heck with them, or the attitude, let them do whatever they want, why do we have to bother with it? Why both attitudes are unchristian? Because we care about the person who's doing wrong, and we want them in the communion of the church, and we want them to go to heaven. So this is why the church does what it does when she issues a warning to someone who's publicly doing something scandalous, as in the case of a Catholic politician. It's the same logic as what happens on a much smaller level when someone sins against me and I need to go and talk to them about it privately. So none of this is easy. We need God's help for all of it. And so as we meet Jesus today, we can bring to him our own struggles. How does this gospel touch our own life and our own heart? To those who have hurt me in some way, how have I responded to that? Or when I'm watching the television and I'm seeing politicians or other people with whom I disagree politically, what's my heart towards them? Do I write them off? Do I say, I don't care about them? Or do I say, I see my brothers and sisters who are doing wrong. I have to love them. Very challenging gospel for us today. But let's ask the Lord to help us with the ways that we struggle so that our Christian family can become more and more what it is, a family. This is what's missing in our world today. It's this sense that whether we agree or disagree with another person, we're family and we're called to love. Let's ask Jesus to help us to live that love concretely in the ways that we need to in our life.